Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
Typically, it's a party. I like to party, as I said. But, boys, I'm going to tell you, I ain't going to lie to you, man. Every now and then, get that blood boiling. We got to talk about it at 4. This is a different one for me because that's a huge win for the Texans. And that was a win where I'm comfortable having the conversation, as we did kind of indirectly a couple of segments ago, about, hey, where do the Texans fall in the teams in the AFC or the better teams in the NFL? And right now, I think they validated by beating the Buffalo Bills that they deserve to be in that conversation, squarely in that conversation of top teams in the AFC. And it's crazy to believe, but when you watch that film, the Texans did not play good football. They did some good things along the way, but on the offensive side of the football, they did not play good football. In the third quarter, it was bad all the way around. The penalties happened again. I think they had 6 penalties in that one quarter. 7, actually. One of them got declined, so I think it was 6 penalties.
Every week, though.
And the fourth quarter, there was 2 turnovers. In that third quarter where the penalties happened, I think the Buffalo Bills scored 14 points. The defense couldn't stop the run. The defense gave up some chunk plays, and they really struggled in that third quarter. Overall, I think as a team, I think the Texans, this was another probably B-minus game as a whole. I know the defense played great late. Special teams were really good when it mattered the most, but you look at it like special teams. You had a guy catch, I think it was 2 punts inside the 10, 1 inside the 5-yard line.
Yeah.
You had a punter have a 38-yard punt in that third quarter when it was rough. There was some special teams struggled at times. The offense struggled at times. The defense struggled at times. So it was really not a great football game for the Houston Texans, but it was a big win. Tape drop Tuesday, the All-22 came out, and I had a chance to lay my eyes on it. And, fellas, I'm just going to get right to it. I don't care what folks say. I've had all I want of Dalton Schultz. I've had all I want of Dalton Schultz.
Wow, dude.
I don't know that I've ever witnessed a player less interested in physical contact.
Oh, my God.
I don't know that I've ever seen a player quit on plays when he doesn't have perfect positioning or the perfect pathway or perfect contact on a defender to try to block him.
I take it this isn't just this week for you.
No, it's not. I mean, Dalton, here's the thing. Dalton, I don't think Dalton's ever been a guy that you're like, hell yeah, man, he's going to crush people in the run game. But I'm seeing a level of quit, a level of softness, a level of disinterest, a level of what appears to me to be, it's almost appears to be pouting, actually. I don't know the dynamic. I don't know what's going on inside the building, so I don't know it. But as I watch the tape, it appears to be a guy that is not happy because he's not getting touches, a guy that's being asked to block really good players in the pass protection, a guy that's not, again, not getting the catches, a guy that's in the backfield playing fullback and leading up on linebackers, or at least given that responsibility, and he's not comfortable with it, he doesn't like it, and he wants to do other things. He wants to be in a 2-point stance and running routes and be the leading receiver. That's what it looks to me like. There's a pouting factor going on. But either way you slice it, Ron, there is a level of quit and a lack of physicality that even takes the Dalton Schultz bar of like, he's a pass receiving tight end. He's not a guy that's going to get in there and get super physical. But he's understanding that is the expectation. Like, he is falling well short of that.
And you have talked about this with many guys that are still here across the offensive line, the tight ends.
Yeah.
Is Dalton at the top of the list for you in terms
Dalton took the number one spot for me over Laremy Tunsil. Laramie is clearly there is zero interest in being a physical offensive line, like going out there and imposing your will on another man and moving mass in the run game and pancaking guy. Like there is zero interest in that. There is zero semblance of that level of that type of offensive lineman when you watch Laramie Tunsil. There is a Laramie Tunsil and Dalton Schultz. Laramie, I wasn't going to bring you into this, but it's the truth.
Is the money sign again?
As the play's going on, those guys are looking around, making sure nobody's fixing to run into them. I mean, I could make a 15-play reel of Dalton Schultz giving unbelievably piss-poor effort.
What?
And on top of that, the drive in the second half that they kicked the field goal on, you get open over the middle and you alligator arm a ball that was it thrown perfect? No. But you're a $12 million a year pass receiving tight end. You make that catch all day. You make that catch in your sleep, right? And he doesn't come up with the catch. And then you get a catch and a guy, just absolutely smokes you, what appeared to be in the rib cages, and you get up and you roll the ball and get a 15-yard penalty. So not only are you are like, he is a liability in pass protection. He is a liability in the run game trying to just get a hat on a hat. He is a liability now with getting a 15-yard penalty and a liability dropping footballs. I do not know how Bobby Slowick and D'Amico Ryans watch the film and don't literally have a serious sit down with Dalton Schultz. I don't know how you continue to run him out there with what we're seeing.
Well, I think to something that you said earlier, especially towards Bobby, and I think this is probably Bobby and D'Amico, is at least you got to stop running him in positions where he is vital in terms of what the play is in running the football, or he is vital in terms of the protection, right? Like
it's even disgusting when he's on the backside.
You've shown some clips of him being the fullback, and maybe that has something to do with British Brooks going out, and that's what they had to do. But he's like, you can't put him in those positions anymore.
Well, with Brevin Jordan out and British Brooks out, like you got to bow your neck. Like you hope you got a team full of guys that would understand. Like, all right, let me get in there and give you everything I got, Ron. The last video I showed you, because it's all over the place. The last video I showed him is. He's in the backfield, and it's the same play where Cam Akers ran the touchdown, but he kind of avoids the quarterback, and he comes up to lead up on, I think, a backer. And one of the defensive linemen runs into him. And it's like he gets pushed, I mean, stumbles backwards on him. It's just like the wandering around out there on a football field between the tackles, hoping you don't get hit is what it looks like, and hoping you don't have to hit anybody. It's this run game overall. I'll be honest with you, the attempt to run the football. We can blame it on Bobby Slowick if you want to. I don't really care. I know it works Ron up. You can blame it on Bobby Slowick if you want to. But when you cut the film on and Bobby Slowick hands it, I'd rather him not hand it to Dare Agunbowale twice to start the game, but he did. But if you watch the game, Dalton Schultz gets beat across his face by number 39. Take a guess. 39 is not a big dude. He's not an edge rusher. I believe he's a safety or a nickel defender. And he gets across Dalton Schultz's face, and instead of forcing the guy down and pushing him past the run, he literally takes a couple of steps and just stands straight up in the air and quits on it. The level of quit is unacceptable. And it's like it had me hot. It had me running hot this morning, man.
Yeah, I mean, watching this film. Clearly there have to be some adjustments made. And
well, I just don't know what you like. Like you said, like with Laramie, like what do? You take a $12 million tight end and bump him? I don't know why Dalton's all of a sudden the one in the backfield when to start the season it was Cade Stover doing some of those things.
It's like those things, right? Like to me, I mean, it's hard to have him blocking defensive ends. It's hard to have him in the backfield as the lead blocker. Like if you're going to run screens, like, you know, I think he should at least be able to do this one. This is against usually safeties and corners. But I mean, hell, you might think about it. Is he going? Do you want him to be the lead blocker on the screen?
Well, I don't want him lead blocking nothing. I mean,
but they have him.
Yeah, no, that, no. Well, I mean, I just don't know what other options they have. That may explain why Tegan Quatoriano is now on the roster, on the active roster, right? Is because you don't no Brevin Jordan, no British Brooks. I mean, who are the tight ends on this team right now? It was just Stover and him, and so you're kind of handcuffed on what it is you can do. To put a bow on it, the level of quit and the level of avoiding physical contact that I see from Dalton Schultz is unacceptable.
That's pitiful.
I mean, it makes you regret paying the guy $12 million from the jump before the season started. It's absolutely wild. I'll say this about the run game. You've got two guards, Shaq Mason and Kenyon Green, that are struggling. They're struggling. It's the kind of struggle, though, Ron, that if I'm Bobby or I'm D'Amico, I can live with.
Yeah. Give me your thoughts of the struggle. Is this a struggle to where you just said you can live with, or is this a struggle where, like, we might have to make a change?
No, I don't think you make a change. I don't think
we've reached that point yet.
No, because you're getting a great level of effort, and there you are getting some really, really, when they square them up and they get their hands on them, there's push, there's movement, there's physicality. It's just right now. I can't explain Shaq Mason. I mean, Shaq struggles. I mean, he's a really, really good, a high-level offensive lineman that's never been able to just, like, overpower people. He's always had to be a good technique, fundamental, under control. Like, he had to play a certain way. So I can't really explain that. I think Kenyon Green is just raw. He just hadn't played a lot of football at this level, and he gets excited, and he gets up to the second level too quick, and really good backers will get up underneath him. And so there's Kenyon is going to get better. Like, the reason I say I can deal with it, really, Ron, is because both of them, when they get beat, if they get turned sideways, they're doing everything. They are straining their ass off trying to at least give CJ Stroud somewhere to adjust to, somewhere to push up in the pocket, somewhere to escape to. There's a couple of dudes on this team that when they get beat, like I said, they start looking around to make sure somebody's not coming and going to run into them. And that's just hard to watch. Them two guards, I know they're struggling, but stick with them, man. Them cats are going to be all right. I think this run team, I said this last week when you were out, Ron, I think running the football, I think one thing they can do, and this I said it last week and I think it held up this weekend, is they got to forget the outside zone. Forget the outside zone stuff.
And when especially I say, if Joe Mixon's out.
I don't care what running back's out there. I don't care. Joe Mixon, you can run any offense you want, and he's going to be better, and he's going to break some runs, and he's going to make the run game look better. But I'm talking about the five guys up front. They are significantly better when you are – you can run zone. It needs to be inside zone. It needs to be split zone. It doesn't need to be taught like that, tossing the ball with the zone blocking where they're trying to stretch it out to the numbers. No, sir. No how. Nick said don't run it anymore.
They were so successful with it week one.
Yeah, week one. I think whenever Team X has caught Indianapolis, they were really good running the football that week. Like it is. They got a punt on that outside zone. That's just not. Dare ain't gonna get there. Dare damn sure ain't gonna get there. They're a downhill run team right now at this point in time. And this weekend I'm doubling down on that. Now I will say this. Tell of the tape. Tape drop Tuesday, whichever one you want to call it. The secondary on the defensive side of the football was really, really good. That's not just D'Amico talking. They were sticky icky throughout. The one missed tackle on Kamari Lassiter, it happens. Everything else, man, it was a rough day at the office for Josh Allen. There was very rarely was there anywhere to go with the football. And D'Amico Ryan said it. He said that a lot of times, you know, he always talks about the rush marrying the coverage, and that starts with rush, and the coverage is kind of the group that benefits from a really good rush. This week was the flip. The coverage was actually setting the tone and allowing the rush to do work and allowing guys to make Josh uncomfortable. So the secondary was really, really, really good. The coverage was really, really sticky. Azeez Al-Shaair was tremendous. Henry Toa, another linebacker, was really, really good. Will Anderson was damn good throughout, just pushing the pocket, collapsing the pocket. The defense showed up and showed out. They're going to win a lot of football games with that particular effort. Now, the Buffalo Bills wide receiver crew was very suspect, and they were missing their best guy, which is Khalil Shakir, the little slot receiver. So We'll see if it plays against other better receiving groups, but that was a huge step in the right direction for the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, nine for 30 is 9 for 30, baby. And they were especially good late when it mattered. As you said, Lassiter late. When those they made those three passes, and I said this yesterday. Yes, it was. It has been highly questioned the decision making from Joe Brady and Sean McDermott. But what also helped was the Texans. Everybody in the secondary played tight coverage and was able to make the decision look really, really stupid. Because had they completed any of those, we may be looking at something different. We may be looking at a different deal if they had gotten out of the end zone and gotten themselves to a place where they could maybe try to kick a field goal. So, yeah, big time play from the secondary in that game. Anytime you hold a guy who has been a top five MVP contender the last 3-4 years, to 9 for 30,
yeah,
131 yards, yeah, that was, and a big chunk of it on one play. That's big time. All right, coming up, what we saw this weekend in college football. Is that what we're in store for? Is that what this season is going to be like? Is that what the new college football with the 12-team playoff, is that what it's going to look like? Upsets all over the place. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
I'll take this one, boys, if we get off track. I'll take this one. You always like it when you read the text that starts with, "I'm not racist, but," here we go. "I'm not racist, but I want my O-line to be all white guys." Can we try that? What would be the all white offensive line? Like if we could make the best all white guy offensive.
That's what the whites used to do.
Offensive line right now. Right. I think Creed Humphrey would be the center. Joe Tooney in Kansas City, another really good guard. That Linderbaum kid with the Ravens, he's pretty good too, but I think Creed Humphrey is still the best. I think him as the guard. Who are the best white tackles?
Lane Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Lane is nice. Yeah, you get Lane on the right side. So we got Creed Humphrey, Lane, 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. We're trying to create the best white guy offensive line that we can, because the texter said, "I'm not racist, but I want my old line to be all white guys." So Lane Johnson, right tackle, Creed Humphrey, center. We agree with that.
That'd be fair.
Joe Tooney, left guard.
Right guard would be, what's the dude in the badass out of Indianapolis?
Oh, God. Oh, we can probably move Tooney over because he normally plays Quentin Nelson. Quentin Nelson, maybe move Tooney over Zach Martin. No, Zach Martin's in there.
Zach's
right?
A good one. Yeah.
I take Tooney out. Because I think Nelson's better than Tooney. I go. We just need a left tackle. We got right tackle Lane Johnson, clearly. Then Zach Martin with the Cowboys, Creed Humphrey, Quentin Nelson. Who is the best left? No, Joe Thomas is not a current left tackle. No, Anthony Munoz does not count. He's got to be white.
Got to be active.
Active and white.
Active and white. Not.
John Lopez is rolling in his grave right now, counting Anthony Munoz. Tyler is frantically looking for white left tackles. I can see him and Cheryl. God, do we have any do we have any white left tackles? There's got to be. I'm having a hard time.
The only one I can think of is he's not playing anymore. Big boy, it's on Amazon. He's with the Rams.
Oh, Whitworth. Yeah, do the Ravens? No. Ronnie Stanley. God, there's got to be. We have got to be able to fill the left tackle void. There has got to be somebody. With the 40. No, they got the best.
That's Trent.
They got Trent.
That's big Trent.
Is Colton Miller a left or right tackle?
Who is Colton Miller?
He plays for the Raiders.
I know what you're talking about. Let me see. Let me check him out. God, but that can't be the best. That can't be the best.
Can we get Tristan Wirfs? I think he's mixed. Can we?
Hey, Colton Miller's left tackle. He's left tackle. Hey.
Tristan plays on the right
side. It's the only pale face I've seen.
Is that the only? Is he a left tackle? Is he the leader in the club? Oh, what is Joe Alt, the rookie? He was really good with the Chargers. Is he the left tackle?
Well, it sounds like he's going to have to be.
Because they got Rashawn Slater, too. I'm trying to remember if he plays the left or he plays the right. Joe Alt is David Bakhtiari. I don't think he's active.
No, I don't even think he's on a roster, is he?
I don't think so.
I don't know what Joe Alt's doing for the Bolts now, but at Notre Dame, he played left tackle.
He's got to be the one. He was a top. Damn it. No, Rashawn Slater's the left tackle.
Joe Alt's move on to half to guys that are mixed, half-half?
That's what the Whites used to do.
Can we get one?
Jake Matthews.
There you go.
The Falcons.
Hey. Right,
left tackle. Jake Matthews.
The bloodline.
What about the Titans? They're always good. Titans, in Vrabel's day,
Decker, but I don't think Decker plays.
What about New England? New England's always
good for a good white.
They're always good for a good white tackle.
I don't know. Rob Mayo may have said it's a new day.
Yeah, he may change that, huh?
Who is New England? I think Jake Matthews is it. Jake has hung on, by the way. Guys, Jake Long is not active. Come on. We quit. And the text line's fighting over Richie Incognito. No, we can do better than Richie. Oh, boy. I'm glad we had to. Clint was going to try to claim mixed play.
I was on my way. I was moving that direction.
So that's a pretty good O-line. So to the texter, we did it for you. You got to find your white O-line. Start making, giving these guys a shot at left tackle. Start doing that, man.
Swing. We had to swing lane over.
I thought we was going to have to make somebody go over. Damn, Joe Alt's not a left tackle. Damn. You spend a top six pick at a right, I guess. So we're doing our thing there. All right. Well, that was fun.
Appreciate you, text line.
Thank you for helping us out there as people are still rolling through. That guy from the Saints, yeah, he's a right tackle. But he used to be Ryan, what's his name? Ramchick or something like that. I wanted to say Trevor Penick, but I didn't want to just piss off Seth. That is that guy right there does Seth in every single.
Can we get one of the Samoan guys in Detroit? will that work?
Yeah, was it the Penae Sewell? I don't think he counts.
Tyler Milner just texted me and said, "What's up, cracker?"
Shit. The Texans, they don't have a single white offensive lineman, do they? Not even the backups. Do they got one?
And they say, no.
Is Brocker still on the team? He's a bad guy.
Yeah, he's definitely a white guy. Nah, Heck didn't make it. Yeah, they ain't got too many over now.
Just them. Damn, boy. Well, now people are trying to bring in swing tackles.
Well, whichever texter originally texted, I hope he's not a Texans fan. they ain't got but one on the three deep, man. It's
probably that line's pissing him smooth off. Somebody sitting there watching. Damn it, that's it. God dang it, we got to get some of these white guys in here. Nick, what are you doing?
That's what the Whites used to do.
They don't move anybody. I tell you what, Lane Johnson would be jumping offside. Put Brocker in there. He might get beat, but he won't jump
offside. Hold his water.
Every week, though, there's no excuse for that.
So what Texas said, can we claim Larry Allen? I don't think you got it. I think they kept Larry Allen. All right. Let's get to this college football conversation. I'm interested from Clint. Nobody follows college football at this station more than Clint Stoerner does. Is this what we have to accept? Is this what college football is about to be moving forward? Upsets and parity all over the place. We'll discuss that, Nick.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Stoerner and Hughley.
Clint, you've been following college football for a long time. You played in it, and there have been tears. Like, we've seen a lot of sports have parity. We've seen it in the NFL. They've tried to force the league in that way. We've seen it in college basketball a lot, where we can see a team like Gonzaga can come out of nowhere and be a power and not even play in a big conference. We can see, you know, teams that aren't necessarily blue bloods compete with other blue blood, the UCLAs, the whatevers. We can see, we've seen parity. We see in the tournament, you know, a 16 seed can beat a one seed. We've seen that multiple times now. But we haven't really seen that in college football. We've not really seen parity and not seen just upsets all over the place. What? Vandy hadn't beat Alabama since 84, 85.
Wow.
One, give or take. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, you know, it just, we don't see that in college football. But now, Clint, we talked about how crazy last week was, where Minnesota's beating USC and Michigan's losing to Washington. And that's not, this isn't your Chris Peterson's Washington teams that have made to the playoffs. This is a different level team. And we've seen Georgia damn near lose to Kentucky. And you're just seeing much more of that. Do you think that's where we're heading? That college football is about to be much more like college basketball, where it's parity, where these teams that are perceived at a different level at the top may potentially start come closer to the middle where everybody else is?
No, I don't think so. I think that we perceive games and losses a little bit differently because now teams can survive it and still have a chance to win a national title. But I think now we are seeing a year where
maybe it's,
you know,
just
two of the four teams, really three of the four teams that were in the college football playoff last year had a coaching change. You know, we're seeing a year this year where, you know, your what I would say is your lead dog right now in the Heisman Trophy is a transfer that's transferred not once but now twice across the country to Miami. You know, so you're seeing this transfer portal, conference realignment, coaches shifting all over the place. I think we're seeing a result of kind of all of that hitting at once. But no, I still think you're going to have your usual suspects when it all gets down to four teams left, or it all gets down to the best teams in the country. I think we're going to have our usual suspects.
Because see, I've looked at this, Clint, and I've thought like, all right, yeah, they're inviting more teams to the dance. You know, now yeah, it's 12 teams.
Yep.
But I thought, yeah, it'll be Georgia, Bama,
yep.
LSU, and Texas at the end. I don't know, man. Like, and the points you made, like teams like A&M and Arkansas and even a little lower than that, like we could sit and pay. Like now, like. One, coaches aren't just staying there and players aren't just coming to play for coaches. And two, if you can pay money, then you can get – I mean, that guy from UNLV just stopped playing.
Yeah.
Because he's not getting his money because he's trying to go
– Who, by the way, the backup absolutely balled out.
I was about to say, yeah, they were beating the doors off of Fresno State after he left. But I think with the amount – with the ability to pay guys, and I think players are better across – the way I think there are more good players now coming up than it was, let's say, when you played. I think there are more pool of players where everybody can't go to all of these schools. And, like, some of these schools can't compete and pay. Like, for the first time, teams like A&M and Arkansas, and I know that's, you know, I know I mess with Tyler, but Tyler understands there's at least a perceived different level that A&M is upon some of those others.
But they have,
we make fun of him messing about the money, but they have the money to go and just get, not just recruits now, but go and get ready-made guys. Like, they can go get what Miami did.
Ain't nobody got no money like Texas.
And if you pay the amount of money, that's why I wonder, like when we start seeing teams like, you know, Vandy, is this just a one-off a deal? And will they – like, these games are a lot tougher and closer than we've ever seen before. And I just wonder if this is – if we're about to see parity switch
in college football. I'm excited to see it. I'm into it because it feels like anything can happen.
Yeah.
On any given Saturday.
I mean, the thing is, like, what I follow the closest, obviously, is Arkansas football, and I view NIL, I view conference realignment and transfer portal. I view all of that like as an Arkansas grad. Like I feel like it's an opportunity for Arkansas to somewhat level the playing field. You're still not gonna you're not getting five stars from jump and being able to develop them. You're not getting four stars from jump and being able to develop them. So you're always going to be behind the eight ball. But you can take those other teams 5 and 4 stars that didn't pan out, and you can see what you can do with them. And so it's an opportunity to level the playing field. Like at Arkansas. You know, you've got some big time companies, Fortune 500 companies right there in Fayetteville that could literally make Arkansas an NIL powerhouse overnight if they so choose. They hadn't done it yet, but if they did, they could become a powerhouse overnight. I don't think it's a way to become Alabama. I don't think it's a way to become Georgia. I don't think it's that sweet of a deal, but I do believe that you can close the gap. With all that said, Arkansas hadn't done it.
No, they haven't done it, but...
You're still dealing in somebody else's leftovers for the most part. You may buy 4 or 5 star here or there, but you're not getting them at the same clip that some of these top programs are. The Michigans of the world, you're not getting them at that clip right there. You're still buying somebody else's ultimately bad apples. Guys that couldn't start there for one reason or another. Guys that got that fell out of favor with the coach for one reason or another, and so. It's a little bit more of a struggle. I just don't think it's going to impact the college landscape that much. I think the big impact is you can lose more games now and still get in.
Yeah, that is a big impact. It just seems to me, Clint, and you're talking about kind of buying like Arkansas or A&M or Baylor or any of those TCU, like kind of buying and getting some of the weaker. Or the guys that didn't pan out that were 4 or 5 star recruits. I think what we're seeing now is those schools can buy, like they have the ability if they want to, if they so choose, like you said. Like when we look at your two schools, if the Arkansas Cats and Tyson and everybody up there just said, F it, man, we're going. Like you can go make Jalen Milroe make a decision. Like, you have that ability now to go and make great players that you already know. And I don't think players are afraid to say, all right, I'm going to leave Alabama and go to Arkansas. If they paying me right,
yeah.
I'm going to bounce. Oregon just went up and grabbed OU's quarterback.
Yeah.
I know Oregon is not a slouch, but I mean, damn, you just left OU?
Yeah.
That's about to go to the SEC and bounce to go to Oregon? That's what I'm saying is some of these schools that if they say, hell with it, man, we're going to get some resources. Yeah. I'll go and grab you. I'll go and get your guy that's established. That's to me where this thing is becoming interesting. And these teams aren't getting off the bus scared of Alabama anymore. And these teams aren't getting off the bus scared of Georgia anymore as well, because like, hey man, shoot, we can roll with it. So, I'm intrigued to see if this is something that continues to be a thing in college football, if this thing starts to shift over to me the way that college basketball has, in a way that I never thought it would. Like, you can go in some years in Houston and college basketball all of a sudden can become a power out of nowhere. And Houston's been better than Kentucky in college basketball, and Duke, to be honest, in college basketball for the past 5 years out of nowhere. You haven't really sensed to see that in college football, so I'm intrigued to watch this.
There's a lot of change coming down the pike. There ain't no doubt about that, man. And it's been around long enough that if you did it the right way, if you got ahead of the curve and you did it the right way, and you do go out and I think Saban said one of the best things as it pertains to the NIL, and it obviously relates closely to what you're talking about is if you pay the right guys. You know, if you pay the right guys, yeah, you pay the wrong ones. What do you say? You pay the wrong guys and you crap out of luck.
But now that goes for everybody.
Yeah, oh sure. No doubt. You gotta pay the right guys. And it just the thing is the powerhouses, the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Michigans, the Oregons, and you know, those teams can afford to maybe miss on a couple of guys where, boy, if you're one of those middle road programs and you decide you can go spend $1 million on a quarterback, that can set you back. Trust me, Arkansas's done it.
No, I mean we mess with them. We'll see what they continue to do, but I mean
it's interesting.
But what Colorado has done, yeah, just in terms of their talent and what they've improved to be.
I want the dogs.
I just want to before we move on to the 5 o'clock hour, I want to throw out a big hug, like a virtual hug to Xavier Worthy. Scored a touchdown yesterday, and then decided to give the football to his mom, who was in the stands.
Mm.
And there it is. His mom's in the stands.
Pretty lady.
And she decided, ooh, she decided, woo, to come to the game in a very, very short miniskirt.
Yeah, she did.
And
love HGTV.
She came down to get that, and somebody, I'm sure of it, may have been a 7-year-old, but somebody caught all of that action, because that thing was flipping up in the front and the back.
Yeah.
And then I saw several gentlemen on Twitter, and they weren't gentlemen. Several men on Twitter.
They weren't being gentlemen.
No, they weren't. and some of the things they said, I'm safe to say they're not. It's got to be tough for a young man to just have your mom, Nikki, just be talked about in very, very nasty, nasty ways of what they would do to him.
Well, he told the commentators that apparently that they're more like friends.
That's what he heard. Yeah, like brother and sister.
Yeah, brother and sister. She's got, what do you think, she is 40?
She's 39, I tell you.
39?
Had him when
she's
he was 18.
She's a beautiful lady. Ain't no doubt
You're
about
younger
that.
Younger than me. She didn't have. What? Why she had to?
The thing is,
like,
whoever's sitting.
Like, Mama, why you got to wear that damn skirt?
Third,
why?
She wanted to look good. It was prime time.
3 through 10 in those two sections got a nice visual of that hug.
Nice. I bet she's a great hugger too.
Like, I mean, like,
I'm shocked we hadn't seen. I'm shocked we hadn't seen a picture. In today's world,
somebody pulled out the phone and got that action.
Oh, no question. Even because how many people you think saw him coming over there and pulled their phone out, not realizing mama's finna bend over.
Y'all think she has an OnlyFans?
That sounded terrible.
I mean, who says, "Hey man, I'm going to the game."
Tyler wants to know what her OnlyFans is.
Again, this is it, man. Xavier, man, I'm telling you, man. I apologize, man. I'm sorry, man. It must have been a rough one. Yes, you got to get off social after that because you got
it
nasty.
Will not be a good
like
night.
Tyler Milner. Out here going at,
hey,
I mean,
man,
I just,
I'm
mean,
a
at
healthy
some point,
male,
like,
as Shannon Sharp said.
Yo, mom, for real, is that what you thought? Like, hey, man, I'm gonna throw on this, I'm throwing my son's jersey, and I'm gonna put on this little ass pencil skirt.
That wasn't a pencil skirt, Chief. That
praise
was
be.
That old pencil would have touched him knees.
Yeah,
ain't nothing touching him knees.
See, I mean, you went out there and you wanted everybody to see your draws, or if you didn't have
something.
She had on.
Now
draws.
We got. If she didn't have no draws on, now if I'm worthy, I'm mad. I can't get mad at moms for wearing it. Be young, be single. Obviously, do your thing.
What if it feels a little warm at the game?
You got to have some draws on. It don't matter, Tyler. You can't. I mean, you can't wear a mini skirt and no draws.
Why?
And be mama at the game and be bending over the front rail hugging me after a touchdown.
You better have some tight ass leggings on.
Nah.
Put some tight ass leggings on.
I bet
Nikki. I bet Teresa used to go to those, what was it, Blue Spring and Blue Springs games. Minied up, boy.
She had a different look then. she had a different look. Shout out to that weight loss my mom had. She wasn't wearing those.
She wearing no mini
skirt. She wasn't wearing no mini skirt.
Mini about it, huh?
Shout out to all you MILFs in the bleachers, too. We appreciate you.
Again, that's why. I mean, and that's tame. I mean, some of the nasty stuff I saw. Boy, what I would do to your mama right now. I would,
okay, that's too far. Like
I'm
you said, that's
tweet,
ungentlemanly.
Like, go look up Xavier Worthy's mama. And
I would treat her to a
ass,
nice steak.
Nasty
dinner.
Ass dudes out there.
Treat her real well. Open doors for her.
What's the name of that wrestling show come on Mondays for WWE Monday Night? What?
I mean, the way you're going on about
that's
it.
Where a lot, that's where a lot. I mean, that,
hey, the
that
way
last
you're going,
word you just said.
The way you're going on and on about it, I'm pretty sure your tweets were probably sounded something like it.
Sad. I didn't have no tweets. I was disappointed in Nikki. Coming up, a change for the Texans' opponent. We'll let you know that. And the latest on some injury news for the Texans and the rest of the league. We'll discuss that day.